Welcome back to Ghana Connect, right here on Joy 99.7 FM. It's a big conversation that a lot of people have expressed deep interest in following the revelation of the entitlements of the managing director of the state insurance company, SIC. For those of you who own cars, homes, and insure with SIC, that is how much the managing director of the company is making every month. And I'm going to run through some of the very, very key allowances and other amounts that the MD of SIC actually get. And it's something that people have described as mind-boggling. I'm going to connect tonight. I want to hear from you also. 055-111-1997. 055-111-1997. Let's hear from you. If you hear some of these things, are you a public sector worker? Are you in the private sector? And you hear some of these amounts being paid to persons working for the state. What do you feel about it? And also the nuance about the debate for a company that is limited by liability, and if they are making profit, shouldn't they decide how much to pay and all that? So the MD of SIC is entitled to a gross basic salary of 840,000 Ghana cedis a year. That is gross. And 840,000 Ghana cedis a year translates to 70,000 Ghana cedis a month. That is the gross salary. She's entitled to be paid the SNIT and Provident Fund, an official accommodation with repairs up to 200,000 cedis. We pay for utilities, property rates, and taxes on the official residence. She gets a clothing allowance of 10% of annual basic salary, and that is 84,000 Ghana cedis every year as cloth allowance. And that is more than some earn as teachers or nurses in the public sector. Entertainment allowance, again, 84,000 Ghana cedis every year. Canteen allowance, 850 cedis per month. Professional allowance, 1,200 Ghana cedis every month. Annual membership dues. She's entitled to be paid health and sports club membership fees up to 3,000 Ghana cedis every year. Domestic health help allowance, 3,000 a month. Personal security allowance, 3,000 a month. Gardener allowance, 2,000 Ghana cedis. She gets an official V8 Toyota Land Cruiser with full maintenance and insurance. And then for fuel allowance, 450 liters per month. If you do that, the math, currently fuel is selling for a little close to 16 cedis. And she has to get 450 liters every month. You do the math yourself. It's huge. And in terms of her travels outside, she's entitled to 30 working days of paid vacation every year. That is about 6 weeks. An annual familiarization tour, airfare up to $3,000. And per diem, every international travel for every day, she gets $810. That is more than 10,000 Ghana cedis for 7 days. And then business class airfare for official trips. And then personal incident and life insurance. It's a big conversation that has generated a lot of talk in town. So this is what is getting our attention today on Ghana Connect. And connecting with me on this very important topic is Rose Blankson. She's an assistant registrar at the University of Cape Coast. Madam Rose, it's good to have you on Ghana Connect. Hello, Rose Blankson. Well, we'll get Madam Rose Blankson to connect with us on this matter pretty shortly. Golda Essie Andam is also the headmistress of Swedru Senior High School. Madam Golda, it's good to have you join us. Hello, Madam Golda. Well, we appear to have some challenge with the network. We'll fix that pretty shortly. Abdul Salam is also connecting with us on this matter. Abdul Salam, can you hear me? And welcome to the show.
Quick, I can hear you loud and clear. It's always a pleasure joining you on the show.
Great. And Nana Kakari is a regular on this show. And Nana Kakari has a very, very interesting profile that I'm going to read to you pretty shortly. But Nana Kakari, it's good to have you connect with us.
Same here,
Kweku.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Right. So Nana Kakari is Senior International Affairs and Political Analyst. She's based in Atlanta, Georgia, and she's into news and current affairs, and she's connecting with us. Let me try and see if my other guest can hear me. Rose Blankson, it's good to have you on the show.
It's good to have you too. Good evening.
Yes. And then Madam Golda Essie Andam is the headmistress of Swedru Senior High School. Madam, it's good to have you connect with us. So let me start a conversation with you, Madame Rose Blankson. And you are in the public sector. You work for a very popular, very major university. First off, do you sense that there's a major disparity in how we pay persons in the public sector? Or you believe that it's really much ado about nothing, the conversation that we've had in the last few days?
I honestly think there is too much discrepancy, and not a little, but so much. And I'm glad we are using this SIC CEO case as our point of call. As I'm speaking with you, I'm holding in my hands the single spine salary structure for public workers, so to speak. And July 1st, 2024. So I would say December or until the new negotiations that are ongoing are effected. And if you look at this salary structure, the least person, that is the step one, someone on step one, that is a laborer, earns 5,990 per annum. And the highest that laborer can earn is 7,585. Now I'll jump from there and go to the highest.
Madam, I'm not cutting you. If you do the math, it adds up to 632 Ghana cedis every month for this laborer. Then that is the highest he can earn on the salary structure. And if you compare that to the laborer for the SIC boss, she's getting, that person, he or she, has a ceiling of around 2,000 Ghana cedis a month.
Exactly. Now, I'm jumping straight to the highest. And the highest in a university is a full professor. So a full professor at the university earns 130,974 up to the end. And the end, which is step seven, is 114,914. A full professor. To become a professor, an equivalent of a full professor is a registrar of a university. So someone who has risen through the ranks with all the qualification, I mean, you know, to become a professor,
such a tedious PhD publications and all that you have to do.
First degree, second degree, PhD, published to become an associate professor before you can publish again, and not just publications, but supervision of master's programs, PhD theses, and all of that. Teach a number of credit hours and everything. As an administrator, you have to write, you have to publish, write position papers, memos, policies, statutes, and all of that, and run the day-to-day administrative work of a university. And the highest that these categories of people earn is not even up to 12,000 per month. Is the discrepancy not too huge?
I mean, if you compare that to SIC, and SIC, I mean, in terms of
It's not even just SIC. Let's go to Parliament. Our parliamentarians, how much do they earn? A teacher with a first degree, teaching in a secondary school somewhere, goes into politics, is fortunate enough to be elected a parliamentary candidate in a stronghold of a particular party, and wins the seat and goes to parliament. That teacher who was hitherto earning about 3,600 to 4,500 a month is now earning 24,000 Ghana cedis to 30 Ghana cedis. Let's look at our ministers. Yes, it is the SIC chief executive who has come out.
So, madam, because you mentioned...
I get
Madam B, not to catch you again, but because you mentioned MPs, ministers, just a brief understanding so that our audience can follow. And these persons, their salaries are approved in arrears. So that means that up until they finish serving their tenure, their salaries will not be set. And so up until the last time in 2020, the Speaker of Parliament earned 35,000 Ghana cedis a month. The first Deputy Speaker earned 33,000 Ghana cedis a month. Second Deputy Speaker, 32,000. An ordinary MP, that is a member of Parliament who is not a minister, who is not a leader in Parliament, earns 28,000 Ghana cedis a month. These are basic salaries, devoid of all the various perks and allowances that comes with it. And that is 2020. The 2024 one that has been done and approved, we are yet to get public indication of that yet. And then the new Parliament, their salary will also be adjusted in 2028 and all that. And so it's good context for the conversation that you've just discussed.
Exactly. So today we are only discussing the SIC boss or the immediate past SIC boss because she did something that caused her to be in the public domain. But she's a CEO. And so we can confidently say that if not all CEOs earn these and more, at least about 70 to 80% of them do.
Interesting.
And that is very, very unfair.
Great. And ma'am, we'll come back into some of these. So let me bring in Nanako Fiakwa. Nanako Fiakwa, you've heard the very, what I will call, chilling details. And this is the first time that I'm getting to hear a lot about the single spine pay structure. And Madam Rose Blankson has been kind enough to break it down for us. I mean, a full professor, you know, a tenured professor, all you have to do to get there, you are earning less than 12,000 Ghana cedis a month. You are running the university administration. You are doing a lot of things. That's how much you earn. And then you compare to what people in the public sector, other people also in the public sector, MPs, CEOs, MDs, all that they earn. How unfair is this? I mean, do you get the same sense as Madam?
I think my opinion is a little different, and I empathize with everyone who is on the single spine program, from professor to laborer. I feel that the bigger problem is actually not the money itself, but how the inflation of the city. And how, so for example, the person who earns 12,000 Ghana cedis, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, if you earned 12,000 Ghana cedis, you could do a lot with it, you know. But in just the past 2 years, 3 years, the cedi has lost so much value that even the 12,000 Ghana cedis does nothing, you know. And that's where the real problem is. If you go to countries like Ethiopia, even Nigeria, the cost of food in Nigeria, you know, it's, you know, what will feed 10 people in Nigeria may not feed up to 3 people in Ghana in terms of value for money, you know. So those are, for me, those are the main issue, that our city is becoming, forgive the harsh word, but it seems to be getting worthless and worthless. More worthless as the time goes by, you know. And so first and foremost we may need to update the single spine whatever. But in terms of CEOs earning the amount the SIC boss earns, I personally was not shocked at all. In fact, if I'll be very, very, very honest, I thought that if she's worth, like, if she's bringing the type of value a very good CEO can bring to an organization, then she's actually underpaid. And what do I mean by that? The way to look at businesses is not the salary. The way to look at businesses is value addition. So for example, let's take multimedia. Let's say multimedia on the average makes 2 million Ghana cedis a year. And then multimedia gets a new CEO and the CEO says, I can move the profit we make from 2 million Ghana cedis to 200 million Ghana cedis a year. See, now, for somebody who is bringing that much value addition, how much do you think would be fair to pay them? So I actually like to review salaries, not based on the NAMES themselves, but to ask myself, this person holding this position, how much value are they bringing? You know, because if the person is bringing top quality value, what happens is that the business really becomes truly profitable. All employees will take home really good salary, and the business can grow, creating more opportunity.
Yeah, so I like the distinction you make. I mean, SIC, for instance, is profit-oriented. But we know a lot of our state-owned enterprises, they just make loss after loss, including the Bank of Ghana itself, recently making as much as 40 billion Ghana cedis and over in losses. But you still look at the entitlements that they earn compared to other persons in the public sector,
yes,
like professors, like this registrars who are doing so much. And if sector for a country like Ghana, I guess that is the conversation people want to have about a poor country.
Yes,
like Ghana.
Yes. And in which case there's a problem. If the person is being paid, listen, even if they are being paid 2,000 Ghana cedis, okay, and they are leading an organization that is consistently declaring losses, that person doesn't qualify to be there. For me, that's the angle to look at these things from. So anybody in any position in this country, whether public sector or private sector, being paid whatever, and if that person is not, if they are not adding value, you know, it has to match. You know, if they are not adding value, they are a liability.
Yeah.
You know, and the situation where we politically appoint people into top executive positions is part of the problem. You know, somebody serves, you know, like, look at the people being vetted for these positions in parliament. You know, academically speaking, professional experience speaking, how many of the ministers being put in these positions? You know, like if they were to go for a job interview in the private sector to head the organizations they are being appointed to head, in the capacity they are going to head it at, how many of them will be professionally qualified for those positions? You know, and so these are the problems. You know, this whole winner takes it all politics becoming a way to reward ourselves financially. And that's why you have an MP win a seat, and then we'll go and be throwing money like at a Nigerian wedding, you know, flying money around. You have to ask yourself, is he doing this from his salary? No. So these are the problems we have to look at. But if we are a country that wants to grow, we have to run the country like a business. If you are putting anybody in any position, you have to ask yourself, what value are they bringing? Value doesn't always have to be money. For example, if you are the headmistress of a school, you are not running a business, so we are not expecting the value in terms of money. But how well are your students doing? You know, like at the end of the year, when the BEC results or the WASI results come, how well did your students do? How well are they trained? How is the school environment like? How is the school being run? You know, and if you find somebody who is doing a fantastic job, pay them well.
I mean, Nanaka Karia, I wonder where you stand on this very huge disparity in the public sector, where, like Madam Rose Blankson gives you the details, professors earning, some of them earning very little, most of them, all of them, the public universities, a lot of public sector workers, if you go to the ministries and you ask a civil servant what their salary is, very low. And then you compare to SOEs, state institutions, making losses after losses, year after year, and getting millions, and taking it home.
You know what, Kweku, I think they all made a great point, but I would like to focus on some of the companies that you did mention. When we talk about Cocoa Board, we talk about SNIT, we talk about Bank of America, these are companies that actually play a crucial role in the development of Ghana, especially when it comes to the economy. So clearly they are going to work on attracting and retaining their best employees. And to do so, I think that they have to offer these kind of competitive salaries. Another thing that we also have to look at it is the responsibilities and the expertise of these people in that role. Clearly, we're not going to expect an entry-level worker or an average worker making the same amount of money as a CEO in these institutions. The CEO is coming in with extensive experience. It's also, their responsibilities are going to be more than the responsibility of an entry-level or an average worker. So then we should expect them to make more. Also, you have to look at the market value, right? With the market value, if you're looking at this, like Cocoa Board, for instance, that oversees the cocoa industry in Ghana. Look, today is Valentine's Day. Easter is just around the corner. We all know that we are experiencing shortage of cocoa. So the demand is up. And so Cocoa Board is going to expect revenue to go high because they're going to increase their prices. In a situation like this, you have to know that, you know, their first quarter is going to bring in more revenue than what they will expect in the second or third quarter. That being said, I did see the laundry list of the SIC. I don't think she was a CEO. She was actually a managing director based on the reports that I read. I did not have a problem with the salary. What I did have a problem with was the additional perks that she was asking, right? For instance, the recreational, the travel, the going as far as asking for gym membership. That was ridiculous. I mean, to a point where I had to stop to wonder if she really meant to add those laundry lists to a lawsuit or that laundry list was meant for a sugar daddy.
So, for context, that is actually all she earns. She actually earns them now. She's not demanding them. And her argument in the suit was that if you are dismissing me, then you have to pay me all these entitlements up until the end of my contract, which is in 2028. You have to add everything which runs into the tens of millions of Ghana cedis and pay me off in lieu of terminating my appointment.
Yeah, you know what? She had issues. I think the problem was the beginning of the what the company set up, right? Those additional perks were ridiculous. Like I said, I did not have any issue with the salary, but then the additional perks that the companies are offering these managing directors or these folks in these top tier positions are the problem. This is where my concerns are. Now, I think that you're right. What she's saying is her contract was set to end 2028, right? That means she had 3 more years to go. So if you are terminating her right now, then she deserves to get this whatever she was making, because that's what she's used to. So the problem was from the onset. Whoever drafted that contract, knowing that every 4 years, I think the term is every 4 years, you know, we are in election time and there's possibility that there's going to be a change in administration. Why renew her contract in the first place? So that's where the issue was. And then, of course, like I said, this is happening in many companies, like you mentioned, in Ghana. The additional perks is where the problem is. But also, this is where the caveat is, Kwaku, is the salary gap. When you look at an average person making in the single digits, and you look at these people making hundreds of thousands of Ghana cedis, the gap is huge. And this is where the problem is. This massive disparity is what contributes to the income inequality that we are talking about. And all this must be looked into.
Mo Salam, what do you stand on that?
Thank you very much, Kwaku. For me personally, I've been listening in, and I think my colleagues are making very salient points. But from my perspective, where I'm coming from, the issue is very, very multifaceted. If you look at what is happening today, it is without a doubt that the gap is huge. If you look at the ordinary working class and the people who are in positions of power, for example, people who are politically exposed and appointed to these positions. But the most important thing in all this is that, like Nana Kofi Akua mentioned, which I disagree in part, that the country has to be run like a business. As a business person, it is something that you will think about. It is something that you would perhaps be inclined to, because with business comes great responsibility and you have to, you know, bring in the benefit. But coming from my background as a political scientist in the policy industry, should the country be run like a business, some aspects of the economy has to run like a business, but the country as a whole cannot be run like a business. If that is so, then it means that there's no need for politics, because the way our country is structured, the political nature of our country, it is by default that some people who are politically exposed or who are in the business of politics would ordinarily and necessarily be put into these places, regardless of of their expertise in those industries. That said, if you look at some of the appointments that are happening, we have to make a distinction between industry expertise and people who are going in there to direct government policy. I think many people and many Ghanaians do not understand this. If you look at a minister, for instance, or an MD, for instance, or a CEO, for instance, in a private entity, their roles may be completely different from government. For example, if you look at the CEOs and also the ministers, that is why it's a ministry. We have the chief director of the ministry with all these civil servants and bureaucrats in the ministry. They are those who run the day-to-day affairs of the ministry in terms of expertise, in terms of implementation. But the minister who is going in there, it is there to shape government policy, to ensure that there's supervision, to ensure that there's a link between the ministry and the presidency, and to ensure that there's money that is going in there in the ministry. The huge responsibility of the ministry with regards to expertise and the actual work relies on the chief director of the ministry and his or her bureaucrats that works under him. But moving aside, if you look at the salary gap, that I agree completely that there's a huge discrepancy. But my point is that the backbone of every economy is the working class. And in Ghana, for the longest time, we have ignored, we have abandoned this working class of people to live in abject poverty. We do not care about the working class, the normal teacher, the normal nurse, the doctor, the professor. Nobody cares about these people. If you look at what has been happening over the last decade when it comes to labor unions, the strikes that we've witnessed, it has been politically infiltrated. And that is my point. Should these people really need change in these sectors, the working class, the ordinary doctor, the nurse, the teacher, the professor? If we eschew politics, partisan politics from these institutions, our labor unions would be in a better position to demand for better salaries. But that is not the case. There are people in there who have been put in there by the same politicians that we tend to antagonize. It has become, labor unions have become antagonistic in the sense that it is self-inflicting because the politicians have infiltrated it. If you demand for better compensation and salaries, it looks as if you are trying to make the government unpopular. And so people in there are also are politically exposed. People in there support either NDC or MPP. So it becomes a question of these people are disturbing the government. When it was this government, what did you do about it? You kept quiet and you are in government and you are complaining and that kind of thing. Until we find people in the labor unions, and I must say the labor commission is not doing its job. In fact, it is working for the government of the day instead of working for the normal class. I think we need serious reforms in the labor at the labor commission, and also we should try as much as possible to eschew that kind of partisan infiltration of these institutions. And lastly, before
I'll come back to you on that. I want you to brief on that point for me. I want to bring it back. Madam Rose Blankson, and Mo, the point you make, there's also, apart from the National Labour Commission, there is the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission that is supposed to ensure that wages in the public sector are fair. Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. But the jury is still out there on the work they do. Madam Rose, I mean, given the stark gulf in the salary, the discrepancy, surely the single spine salary, do you sense that there's a clamor within organized labor that it really must go and that it has outlived its usefulness and it's just stifling the growth of salaries for those of you being paid on that structure?
Well, the single spine salary structure, the idea was to streamline salary of all public sector workers. But honestly, did it really achieve its aim? I don't think so, because it's only for people in the controller and accountant general's department. I mean, people paid through the controller and accountant general's department or the public universities and other sectors that draw their salaries from the public or the national purse. So I really don't think it's really lived its usefulness. Yes, when the single spine salary structure started, it was okay. And as I don't remember whether it was Nana Kofi, yes, I think it was Nana Kofi, who mentioned the fact that it's not just about the discrepancies, but the value of the monies we are paid. Is it valuable? If it's valuable, someone may earn 12,000, but it can do so much. And yes, in the past, 5-4 years ago, if you were even earning 3,000, it could do so much. But now, if you earn even 10,000, what it could do in the past 3-4 years, it can't even do half of it. So that single spine salary structure, personally, I think it has outlived its usefulness. Yes, it tried to bridge the gap, but it didn't really succeed at bridging the gap because the gap is still wide. Some people are not on that structure and they are enjoying what they have to enjoy. Yes, a CEO, a managing director of COCO board, of SIC, of BOST, of ECG, need to earn something. But that CEO cannot compare to a professor or a PhD teaching in a public university or technical university. How many years? Let's even bring this into perspective. These people who have been even appointed to this, what is their work experience? How many years have they worked? Did they climb through the ladder to get to where they are? If we pick 10 of them, we might not even get one who has climbed through the ladder to get to where they are. Almost all these are political appointments. So we have people who complete school after national service, they might not even work at all. They will do politics. They find themselves in politics, and then you find them becoming CEOs and deputy CEOs and all of that of these companies. And they are earning so much. They don't even have the expertise. And I will say it on authority. Most of these people who have been appointed don't even have the expertise to be where they've been appointed to. You cannot compare these ones to lecturers. You can't compare these ones to administrators who have risen through the rank as assistant admin, admin assistant, senior admin assistant, principal admin assistant, chief admin assistant, junior assistant registrar, assistant registrar, senior assistant registrar, deputy registrar, and ultimately a registrar. And don't forget that going through all these steps, you are being trained and groomed. So how can we even compare a second degree holder who hasn't done any work but politics to someone like that and say that, you know, by virtue of the position they hold, they qualify or they are earning the salaries and all the allowances we are paying them. So the single fine salary structure didn't really do what it sought to do. And as Salam said, I mean, the politicians have infiltrated the front of the public sector workers, the unions and all of that. We have one of our union leaders who is now been appointed by the current government. And we had some who were appointed by the previous government. Some constituency executives of political parties were union leaders in either their regions or their districts or their constituencies. So at the end of the day, we go round and come back to square one.
Nana Kofi Akwa, as we speak, the government is currently negotiating with public sector to agree the increment in base pay and all that that they do annually. Do you get a sense that organized labor and other persons are perhaps, given what we are seeing with some of these persons and how they earn, and quote unquote, the ostentatious life they live, are you getting a sense that organized labor are going to continue to be very tough on government, demanding very huge increase? And also, what do we do to address their salary inequality? Single spine is there, but we have Article 97, Article 9, Article That's called Article 91 of his holders and all that, and what they earn compared to single spine. You have managing directors of state-owned enterprises. It's a gulf of different people earning differently. There don't seem to be any harmony and synergy.
Thank you, Kweku. So I have to first and foremost say that I have never worked in the public sector, so I don't have a lot of hands-on experience. I've always worked in the private sector. And to look at the public sector from that perspective, the first thing I'll say is that we have to remember that the single spine system was introduced to solve a problem. And it was very, very effective in solving the problem at that time. I remember that a policeman, for example, if I remember correctly, they moved from earning, you had people moving from earning like 200, 300 Ghana cedis, and all of a sudden they were earning 3,000 and all that. It was a huge boost, you see. But over time, inflation has actually devalued the cedi. You know, so we have to, all they have to do is really update the system. You know, look at it and say, okay, it was good for its time. How do we improve on it? You know, and what else can we bring under this structure? Looking at the current value of the cedi, what will be fair wage? You know, but also there's a bigger issue of the economy itself. You know, as long as we keep importing everything we eat and everything we wear, and we keep on letting all these countries that now want to drive us back home exploit our natural resources, human resources, every resource for free, just one or two beneficiaries, and then they take the gold for free, the timber for free, everything for free. As long as that continues, the cedi will keep on losing value. You know, and so, and once that keeps happening, even if they were to restructure, and the lecturer today earns 200,000 Ghana cedis a month, in 5 years' time, we'll be having the same conversation, and we'll realize, and we'll be like, the 200,000 Ghana cedis he earns a month, or she earns a month, cannot even, you know, buy. You understand? So it's a complex problem. It's a complex problem. But I feel that the effort that went into designing I think it was done under Professor Tamils,
yes,
who was a tax expert. He was a fantastic tax expert, and I think the thoughts and ingenuity that went into the design of the single spine shouldn't be discarded. You know, they should just sit down, have a review of it, and say, yes, it was good for its time, but if we want to be practical in 2025, how do we update this? You know, so single spine 2.0, you know, how do we update it? The other thing I would say is that the public sector has to find a way of weeding out the political elements in the rank and file of the TUC and all those unions. You know, as long as the unions are politicized, they are not going to be effective. As long as they are politicized, they are not going to be effective. That'll be my contribution.
Now, Nonaga Kari, do you not see the argument that some will make and say some of these political office holders, given the responsibility that comes with just being in those roles, the demands that come from all those people, just being a devil's advocate here? Do you perhaps get a sense that some will say that is part of the reason why they have to be paid the way they do compared to the average public sector worker?
You know what, I agree, and I do see the political undertone in these companies. And that brings me to the point I wanted to make. This is why we need some transparency, right? Here in New York City, what they have they started this last year. Employers in New York City have to disclose their salary gap or the pay scale in every position that is advertised. Also, beginning this year, New Jersey is following suit. And I think that's a good strategy that maybe these companies in Ghana can implement. They need to let us know, one, the processes at which they determine these pay scale or salaries for every level or every employee. Also keeping an eye on the performance, the expertise, the responsibilities of where every rank in these companies. Another thing that I thought thought was good is to establish a pay band, right? So if I'm going for a job in, let's say, an essential job, right, like a teacher or a nurse, I should know how much I'm going to make when I first get into the job, or and then how much I'll be making as I climb through the ladder. So I think that's very important. The last thing I'll also say moving forward is a regular, we need to do a regular review of these salaries. People going in, people coming out, all these things needs to be reviewed. We need to review continuously, even if every year or every quarter, review the pay scale, the salary, review the expertise, who is coming in, and determine whether if they still deserve the pay that they are making, the salary they are making based on their performance and also based on the market value.
Mo Salam and Danny, what do we do to bridge the gap in salaries? Or you would say the world is not equal. We leave this as it is.
Well, the world is definitely not equal, but something must be done. I am a social democrat, and for that matter, I am all for equity. But equity does not mean equality. But the most important thing and the overarching thing is that, look, you mentioned Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. There's nothing fair about that commission. They are not doing anything that I think is commendable because of the politicization of those organizations. But moving forward, everyone is talking about review, review, review. But if you look at the data available and if you do a serious analysis, even if there's going to be a review, it is not going to be implemented at least for the next 20 years. Because, one, we are living in a country where we are very broke. Our debt to GDP is almost 70-something percent. We're using almost all our income to pay debt. We're living in a country where inflation is on the root. We cannot do anything at this point. I am not a bearer of bad news, but a review is good. Looking at the practicality of it, what we must perhaps do right now is to fight back and establish the fundamentals. Like Nana Kofi said, we need to ensure that we pay our debt to a substantial, bring it to, sustainable levels. We also have to make sure that inflation is at least stabilized. We have to make sure that our city, has to be locked again. And this time around, the key should not be given to any IGP. It should be thrown away in the sea. And also, finally, if you look at what is happening, it is sad, trust me, honestly. And the only thing I will say is that it will take an honest politician, an honest president, to have an honest conversation going into an election and to say that, look, I'm going to focus on the essential workers of the country. I'm going to focus on the working class. And whether or not you are politically exposed or not, there's going to be cuts from all these, MDs, MMDCs, and what have you, the CEOs and, the politicians. But this would also mean that we have to review our constitution, because the constitution already makes this clear. If you look at Article 91, it talks about the public sector workers. And if you look at Article 71, it also talks about the category of people. So these are things that are already, institutionalized. And so it needs the review should not just be about policy, but also the constitutional review, because we cannot have Article 71 office holders and have Article 91 office holders,
yeah,
where the
discrepancy
is this. Yes, Article 71 and 91. And so it's a constitutional matter at this point, not just about policy. Policy right. Can, regularize, but until we get rid of that Article 71, we will continue to lament about this huge gap.
So, some messages coming in. This one is from Albert, listening to us in Sakumono. He says, please check the salary and benefits of other management staff of some state organizations and compare the salaries of teachers, nurses, and doctors. It's not good at all. Albert, thank you. This one is from Kushito, listening in Tema. He says, I've always had problem with how much these public sector CEO and directors are being paid, contributing absolutely nothing but losses. And Sami, listening from a Kropong Ekuyapem, says, just unfortunately, the disparities. After teaching for over 35 years, I'll be going home with a little over 20,000 Ghana cedis as my tier one from SNIT. Just took that statement yesterday. Sami, really? That's serious. And this one from Sami Hanu, listening in Adabraka in Accra, says, good evening, Kweku. Thank you for bringing this discussion to the public domain. I'm a deputy chief nursing officer who has worked for almost 25 years. My take-home salary is around 6,000 cedis after paying 10% for rent. I had the opportunity to abscond when I had a chance to go and do a fellowship program in the USA, but resisted the temptation to do that. I've now resolved that despite being at the pinnacle of my profession, I will leave should I secure a lucrative job outside. My expertise in my field is one of the best. I can share my payslip with you in case you want it. Samihano, this is very interesting. Thank you very much for sharing that. Nene Pupulampu from Dakoman says, graduates are still struggling to find stable jobs after 10 years of graduating, yet some state MDs are taking uncountable sums of money with just lazy work. God is watching. And Pupulampu from Dakoman, thank you. And then the last one from Sam Bannerman, listening to us in the USA. He says, it is time for our leaders to stop the cup-in-hand business, going around the world begging aid while a lot of unnecessary spending in the system. Looking at the countries, Ghana is running to aid from doing everything possible, blocking some of those unnecessary spending in the system. Thank you very much, Sam Bannerman, from the United States, for sending us that one. But I think that in a country where teachers, nurses, and police officers, I mean, for those many people in the public sector are struggling to make ends meet on salaries barely reaching 4,000 cedis, the revelation that some state executives are making more than 100,000 Ghana cedis a month is nothing short of an indictment on our collective conscience. How does a nation justify such an obscene gulf between those who run state institutions and those who keep the country running? This disparity is not just unfair. Some would say it is immoral. It speaks to a system that rewards power and privilege while ignoring the sacrifices of the average worker. One would say it's an insult to civil servants who work so many long hours in crumbling offices and to young graduates who see no future in jobs that barely is able to cover their rent. National service personnel have to be owed months before they are paid. Ghana is not a wealthy country. Public hospitals lack beds. Roads remain in despair and schools struggle with inadequate resources. Yet, we are not tightening our belts and we are giving up all this. This is not just an economic issue. It's a moral one. And one would expect that the government will pay attention to that and sort that out. Thank you very much for listening to Ghana Connect. And Madam Rose Blankson, thank you very much for your perspectives on this. You really shaped this conversation for us. She's an assistant registrar at the University of Cape Coast. And then Abdul Salam is an international student. She's currently based in Belgrade. And then Anako Fiakwa, you heard from him. As always, insightful, bringing some very important distinction to the conversation. And then you also heard from Nana Kakari, who is a senior international affairs and political analyst based in the United States of America. My name is Kweku Asante. This has been Ghana Connect. We'll see you again same time next week. But again, for those of you wondering, Newsfile is on tomorrow with Samson, Ladi, and Yenini. You don't have to miss out. They are discussing OSP Ken Ofori-Atta, Fugitive from Justice, Oral vs. Okal, JM. Is he the new clearing agent? And then the mass sacking, the last minute recruitment ritual. 9 a.m. to 12 noon is your best weekend program. Up next is The Library with Andy Dust.